Hypnosis. The story of hypnosis is about the understanding of cell communication at the body level, because evidently it's very well known that hypnosis can be used to change how the body functions and also change how and what people think. In my perspective, from my experience, I came to look at hypnosis as a kind of guided tour to the palace of the thoughts in our mind, but also the possibility to edit beliefs and edit convictions as a result of which we think differently about things. And as a result, we also interact with things differently. And so there are very many examples of the use of hypnosis to consciously and unconsciously change the way that we relate to ourselves and to others and to the world around us, with well-known examples such as books, The Inner Game of Golf, The Inner Game of Tennis, where, similar as in Aikido, you get an image of what you would like to do and you let your body do it. In that sense, it helps to make a difference between what you think and what the body does, as a result of which a lot of the problems that people can have, a lot of diseases that people can have, a lot of conflicts, or actually also criminal behavior that people can have, can be resolved by no longer imposing things on the body which the body cannot really work with. It amounts to coming to a trust of the body, in which the body can actually do its things in the way it can do things best, but also with an understanding that you can interact with the body and communicate with the body at that level. There are many examples where hypnosis is being used to change how people blush or how they go white in psychological stressing circumstances. And hypnosis is possible to touch somebody on the skin and actually get the blood to circulate specifically to that part of the skin, so suddenly it turns red, or the other way around. A quick healing sets in on a very precisely indicated spot. It's possible to touch people where they have pain, and then the body basically stops the pain perception. So there is a very strong relationship between hypnosis and the meridian system, because with the meridian system you can change the pain perception, you can change the healing of the body and other things. So what I aim to describe in the text on hypnosis is that understanding that with our thoughts which we can actually talk with the body. But of course it's necessary to realize that in the body we work at different levels of consciousness. There's a cellular level, there's the organ level, there's the body level, and there's the level which most people know about, how we deal with the world around us, including how we talk with other people. It's just that for the body, that what goes on outside of us is literally out of our consciousness, because in the body, the consciousness is in the cell. So the self-conscious is the self-consciousness. And what the cells experience as part of being an organ is being submerged in that cell communication of the organ. And that we can very literally call the subconscious experience. They submerge into that organ consciousness of those cells. And in the same way, the cells in one organ are not quite aware of what happens in another organ, and they are part of it because it's all part of the body communication. But they are not actively, directly co-creating that consciousness in those other organs, so that for them it's unconscious. So from the perspective of the cell is conscious, in the organ they are part of the subconscious of the organ, in the body, that's part of the unconscious process of the body, and outside of the body, for them, is literally out of consciousness. So when we interact with the body through hypnosis, we actually need to work at those four different levels. But those four different levels, they use a very different kind of communication. And an example of that is in our sensory perception. We have sensory cells, they feed their information into a neuron that goes into a plexus, and then it goes into the brain. But we can see that in the sensory cell, it functions as a point. Everything that happens is one whole. That leads to an impulse, which a mathematician would call a Dirac pulse. That's basically all of the frequencies are burst out. So it's like a switch which immediately turns things on and off, and everything is possible or everything is not possible. Everything is happening or not happening. That what happens in the point of the cell then goes into the line of the neuron, where the code is basically sectioned from one part of the neuron to the other. Essentially, it's just a sequence of cells, like dominoes toppling over. It has a kind of pulse code going from one end to the other. From the neuron, it goes from the neural plexus. And the plexus is a tapestry of neurons woven together like a little tapestry. And so these neurons interconnect, and at that level, the information communication is that of a moiré pattern. It can amplify itself within itself. And then the information goes into the brain, where it is processed as a hologram. So in the neurons, we see that we actually work in four different dimensions, point, a line, plane, and a volume, with four different kind of code. Dirac pulse, Fourier code, Moiré array, Gabor hologram. But essentially it means that it's the difference between a point, a line, a plane, and a volume, which is out of the zero dimensions, one dimension, two dimensions, and three dimensions. So in hypnosis, we always work with those four dimensions. And in hypnosis, it's necessary to understand that when we talk to the body, evidently, we are not using, say, the machine code of the computer. We're not even using the assembler code of the cells, as you would call that in computing. So in a way, when we use hypnosis, we use a language that we normally use between us in the outer world, but we don't use it for the outer world. And so instead of working with perceptions, outside us, around us, we are working with realizations within us. So we turn things around. In that way, we nevertheless use the kind of codes that we use for the outer world. And we describe what we see, we describe what we hear, we describe how we feel about things, and we describe how we respond to things. But in the outer world, it would be looking at the clouds, looking at the trees, looking at the animals, looking at each other, and thereby being able to relate to others and the environment differently. But we don't actually relate to the others differently. We relate to ourselves differently, as a result of which we interact differently towards the environment. Of course, we always have a very different rapport with, say, the Earth and, say, other living beings. When we interact with Earth, what we put out gets reflected without any freedom of choice on the part of the rock or whatever we are dealing with. When you work with dead matter, it works as a direct mirror for whatever you put out, the way you connect or disconnect. But when you're dealing with living beings, they can reflect on what you do. They can choose to interact with you, yes or no. They can participate in what you do, or just the opposite. And so in that interaction, you then have not a reflection of what you're doing, but you get the reflection on what you're thinking. So in the outer world, basically, we separate the body level of response with what we do on Earth, and the mind level of the response and what we do with living beings. In hypnosis, we work with both of them. And so in hypnosis, when we use hypnosis, we use the kind of language that we use with other people, and that language we also use for dealing with things around us. So some people actually talk to their suitcase when they move their suitcase, which of course is nonsensical, because the suitcase doesn't have ears. So what they learn to do in the interaction with people, they're applying to the interaction with stuff, with objects. But in the interaction with other people, only half of that communication is what people tell the other. In part, that's also what they tell themselves. So whatever they say, it's a kind of agreement on the basis of a disagreement between themselves and the other, because they tell the other of what they intend or what they perceive or what they think or what they feel. And the other then responds to that from what they think or feel or want or are, and that creates an interaction. But that interaction which we have with other people, in a kind of way, we also have with ourselves. So there are people who think out loud, who speak to themselves as if they're somebody else, and in that manner those people actually tell themselves what to do or what to do differently. And you could consider that that's the foundation of hypnosis and self-hypnosis. In hypnosis, you tell somebody else what they could think about, what they could focus on, and they can go along with those thoughts to discover a different way of thinking, or to discover that they can think differently about things, that they can change their perspective on their thoughts. And for many people, that's important, because a lot of people use their freedom of choice to take decisions out of which they come to convictions, which then determine their behavior. But many people are unaware that their convictions are just thoughts that they created, that they actually conditioned for themselves, of things that they chose to hold to be true, while they could also have thought about it differently. So they meet somebody and they think that they like them or that they dislike them, that somebody they can do things with or not can do things with. And so in a way they took a decision about how they relate to something or somebody, and they hold that thought as if it will work any other time as well. And so they will label people as reliable, unreliable, friend or enemy. And in that way, the opinions, the convictions of people determine how they relate to their environment. And people do that in very many ways, very often quickly, very different circumstances. And many people are not aware how their convictions actually shape their life. And that some decision in the past actually determined that from now on they do or do not like the color red because somebody said so, or something happened which gave red a specific likable or unlikely or unlikable meaning for them. So in the interaction between people, a lot of this kind of conditioning happens, that something that is experienced gets a kind of association of a feeling of like or dislike. But people also do that in interaction with themselves. So instead of talking with somebody else, they talk with themselves. And while talking with themselves, they likewise have choices, they make decisions, they come to conclusions or convictions, and they act on that. In both cases, the situation and the principle are the same. A decision has led to a conviction. But in many cases, people do not see that they can change their conviction. Through a kind of self-talk, they they created that conviction, but they were not educated that by the same kind of self-talk they can eliminate that conviction. In that sense, politics, school education, church education, and advertising is a kind of continuous brainwash or continuous hypnosis of telling people how they could or perhaps even should look at things and think about things. But as a result of that kind of education or indoctrination, many people stop thinking about their own thinking. And so they experience all kinds of things in their lives, and they use previous decisions and previous convictions to interpret whatever is happening. And as a result, they limit their scope of what they can live more and more and more, because more and more the bulk of what they have decided before will determine what they can or cannot do. So they will look at things with less openness, and they will interpret things with less freedom of how they could look at it differently. And the result is that they have hypnotized themselves, literally conditioned themselves, come up with a framework of beliefs, which actually became more and more to a prison. And that's actually what I like about word convictions, and the understanding that people can become convicts of their own convictions, and that they become prisoner of their own belief. And then it is important to realize that the same principle by which they created those beliefs, and the same mechanism by which they conditioned their convictions, they can also use that to get rid of those convictions, get rid of those beliefs. But it means that they use that kind of dialogue which they have with others, and the dialogue which they have with themselves, but now intentionally and purposely turn that around. And that in their mind, they look for things that they believe, that they hold to be true, but now become playful with it again. Instead of saying, well, this is the dogma, or this is the truth, or this is how it is, they realize that that reality is only a realization, and that the realization is not a noun but a verb, that they can change that realization. Which means that everybody can look back at everything that they believe and think about it differently. And of course, a lot of spies and other liars, politicians, learn to do that. That means that they can hold something true for specific circumstances, which is the first part of learning how to do it. But some people actually go so far that they don't just do it for a different circumstance, but they actually do it for different people. So they tell one individual a different story than the other individual, or they tell themselves a different story at one level of consciousness and a different story at another level of consciousness. And so that shows that in the use of hypnosis, it is really important to know who you're telling the story to, which level of consciousness you're working with. But the principle of hypnosis is very simple. You can talk with yourself, pick up anything that you firmly believe in, and then look at it from a different perspective. How would somebody else look at it? How would you have looked at it as a child, 10 years ahead from now? How would you look at it then? And then you recontextualize that belief, and in that sense you can decontextualize that belief. Instead of that belief being valid for every circumstance always, as the dogmatic religious beliefs do, you can see that that belief is actually valid for one set of conditions. As one culture has one religion, another culture has another religion, another culture has another religion, that in essence they all believe that there's more than what we can see, but in a practical sense they refer to it and describe it in a different manner. And just in the same way as you can see that happen between different cultures, you can also see that and apply that within yourself. And that's the power of hypnosis and self-hypnosis. And I always recommend that people learn self-hypnosis, because in self-hypnosis, you determine what the purpose and the outcome is and how you want to change your thoughts. Because in hypnosis, you go to levels of susceptibility. You actually believe that you can believe something differently. But it will be more precise if you know what you choose to believe in, instead of somebody else telling you what you could or should believe in, because not all other people are trustworthy or spiritual enough to help you get out of your problem. Instead of, you can see there are lots of examples in politics and secret police and other systems. Religions have used and abused that for a long time. And there are people who actually try to hypnotize people for their own purposes. The military used martial music to keep soldiers dumb and following orders and just to do things. Advertising, in the same way, tries to convince people that they need to buy stuff, even though it doesn't really much matter what would be fulfilled by buying it. And politicians, in that way, try to hypnotize people to vote for them and give them all the power, which the people then lose themselves. And religions, in that way, hypnotize people to sort of sell their soul and step into a belief which is determined by somebody else instead of by themselves. And so in self-hypnosis, you know that if you do things wrong, you're the cause of it, but you can also be the solution of it. You can apply the same method again and again and again and again until you got it right. In hypnosis, there are really reliable people, really people who intend to mean well, and they can actually help with hypnosis to dislodge dysfunctional beliefs. And of course, you can only know that if what they do really works. But the problem with hypnosis by somebody else is that it creates a dependency on the other. There is an interplay between self-hypnosis and hypnosis, which is called mutual hypnosis, in which you hypnotize the other one to hypnotize you. So in that sense, you hypnotize the other, you give them a set of beliefs or ideals, from which they then work in interacting with you at your other levels of consciousness. And so in that sense, you use them as a mirror, like a side mirror on a car, a rear view mirror in a car, or a mirror that you face, so that you can see things from a different perspective. And sometimes that's helpful, because in hypnosis, you're working with your beliefs and convictions, but some of those convictions you hold real so much that you're not willing to discuss them, and they have become blind spots. For you, it is like that, it cannot be otherwise. And it actually takes a bit of work for yourself to then get out of that belief, so that you can alter that belief. In the story of the Baron von Münchhausen, it is described as the guy who then picks himself up by his own boots. So he bends down, pulls his boots, and up he goes. And of course, if you've ever done that yourself, you know that you only pull your boots more firmly on your feet. And so in that sense, you anchor your standpoint onto your body, and you don't uplift yourself from the floor, and you don't get to a new position or a new standpoint and where you need to be. And the only way to do that is to lift one foot and then pull the other to go next to it, and then by walking go to a different standpoint. So hypnosis is about that kind of walking on two feet. You move one belief to a different position so that you can then pull the other foot to a different standpoint. And either you can make a hike in your inner world, or you can just move your standpoint to a better stance. Hypnosis is about the combination of the two, that you learn to move around in your inner world, and that you learn to operate beliefs and build up one belief to the other, to the other, to the other, so that you can actually have lines of thoughts which lead somewhere, and that as a result you can discover realms of thought within you, and that by following a line of thought you can discover how all kinds of other ideas you have within you connect up. That's that picture of the internal landscape or the internal palace, because it's not just a landscape of one floor, but in multiple floors. So our internal field of knowledge is compartmentalized. It has different floors, different scales, different scopes, and it can best be regarded as a kind of building. And then hypnosis is the art of guiding somebody through that building of their knowledge so that they can reconnect the knowledge that they have, and that they can see how different compartments of knowledge were created for different circumstances, but that you can actually open a door between them and can see how two opposite views are actually part of the same understanding. Hypnosis is in that sense a power tool, because of course our mind is the most powerful tool that we have in our living of our life. And in hypnosis, you can actually calibrate the mind. You can check the mind, you can correct the mind. And learning hypnosis is in that sense very essential, but also very simple, because we use hypnosis in so many different forms, and society uses hypnosis in so many different manners. I call it a religious doctrine, or call it advertising propaganda, or call it political propaganda. There are all kinds of ideals which are being presented. And if you do not know how to think for yourself, you might become suggestible and take on those ideas of others. And in fact, they would help the other, not you. So it's essential that you learn to think for yourself. And that is what we do in everything that we do. And hypnosis is called hypnosis for a very specific purpose and reason, because it is connected to hypnos, which is the Greek word for the god of sleep. Or nowadays we would call it the principle of sleep. In sleep, we shift our consciousness from the outer world to the body world, to the organ world, to the cell world. And we make a sleep cycle going from the beta brainwaves of the outer world to the alpha brainwaves of the body level, to the theta brainwaves of the organ processes, to the delta brainwaves of the cell functioning, and then back from the cell to the organs, to the body, to the outer world. In our life, we spend a lot of time in identification or disidentification with the outer world. And so the outer world is in that sense our training ground, or our video game, our virtual reality, in which we practice what we are and how we want to be. But how we relate to that outer world, we check and calibrate every time when we sleep. In a 24-hour day, people sleep most often around 8 hours, which means that quite a long period of time is about coming back from the outer world to the inner world. And there's another 8 hours in the day which we spend on tuning our relationship to the outer world. So that's in the feeding, the hygiene, the connecting and disconnecting, going from one place to the other. So on the whole, you can say that the virtual reality experience is about 8 hours per day. Some people call it the work day. And then there is about 8 hours for self-care, or reconnecting, repositioning yourself in that environment. Some people call it the time for meals, or the time to travel to and from the work. And then there is 8 hours in which you come back to your senses, or to your true self, which is in the sleep phase. And so in the sleep phase, you can go to your inner self, and then in a way reposition yourself in the outer world. And in that sleep cycle, we literally go from the outer world to the body world, to the organ world, to the cell world, and back again. And that's also what we do in hypnosis or in meditation. And we can then actually say that hypnosis and meditation are two aspects of the same principle. In meditation, you basically follow the sleep cycle without further intent or purpose to it. It is simply that first you have your attention on the outer world and then you intentionally shift it. You go to the body world and you check on the processes in the body, feel what happens at the body level. It's as if you fall asleep and as if you close your eyes, as certainly you do no longer focus on what happens around you, but you now have focus on what happens within you, in your body. So you feel for the pulsation in your body, you feel for the breathing rhythm, for the heartbeat rhythm, and all the kind of sensations that you can have within the body, of muscles that are still vibrating, organs that are still doing something, brain still working with something. And you just observe that the body is doing these things because it was connected to the environment. And when you disconnect it, some of it still goes on. And the more you are aware of what the body is doing when you're no longer focusing on the environment, the better you become aware how there are stresses and tensions in the body due to activities that you have or had in your environment. But of course, if you die or if you sleep or if you disconnect from that environment, it should no longer be active in your body. Your body should be able to relax and just be itself. So the first stage of meditation, the first stage of hypnosis is to become aware of what's still happening in the body and to let it do its own thing, to let it dissolve, disconnect it from the environment so that these after effects can stop. In the same way that you can do that for the body as a whole, you can also see that that happens within all of the organs. The body is composed of all of the organs, but the organs separately, individually, they do the same. They digest the food, they digest the information, they digest the emotions, and they process the after effect of what you have been experiencing, and every organ does that in a different way. At the third level of meditation, you go into that organ level, which in the classic antiquity they called the gods of the Olympus, because the gods are the principles by which you change the relationship in the universe. The organs are the principles by which you change your relationship in your environment. All of the organs have a different position, different role. Some of them are more towards the outside, like the skin. Some of them are more on the inside, like the heart. But all of them relate you to the environment. All of the organs have a slightly different position therein. Together they form a figure eight, a Möbius loop. And half of it works for the inside of the body, half of it works for the outside of the body, but they are connected in this figure eight. And they interact with each other. They balance each other out. And in that sense, every organ needs to be part of all organs. And in that sense, I then say all of the organs are one organ because every organ is part of that whole group of organs. They all need to be connected to work well. And the more you are aware of what happens in your body, the more you can start to recognize the different qualities of those organs within it. And you can feel that part of you is angry, or part of you is happy, or part of you is fearful, or part of you is disconnected. And using Chinese oriental medicine, you can then see how they connect up and how they complement each other. And the more you become aware of this level of organ functioning, that brainwave level of your functioning, the more you are able to, with precision, reposition yourself in your environment. So if you're angry, you know that you've been trying to put information or energy into the environment for which there was no space, and it bounces back and heats you up. In the same way, at the moment that you're fearful, you've tried to put energy into the environment, but there's no receptivity for it. You just get lost and sort of empties you out. And in anger, you heat up. In fear, you cool down. And every organ in that way has its specific effect. And the more you are aware of it, the more you realize that you have that feeling because somehow you didn't position yourself properly in the environment. And that's also why in antiquity, in Greece, Rome, Egypt, they had the mystery games to help people recalibrate these organ qualities. So then they were portrayed as the qualities of gods. So in the mystery plays, people would play Mars and Venus, Jupiter and Saturn and so on, and go into a kind of inner experience or inner perspective by which they could look differently at how they perceive the world around them and also how they perceive themselves. For example, Saturn is critical, judgmental, and it takes decisions, while Jupiter is jovial and open and leaves space for things. They complement each other. On the one hand, you leave room for things, on the other hand, you do not. And if you tend to be too loose in how things work in your life, in the mystery play, you would be invited to play the role of Saturn, in which precisions, agreements, timing, and specifications really matter. So that part is trained, and that capacity, that quality is added into the relationship between you and the environment. When you go to a deeper level, you can see that all of these organs are doing exactly the same. They're a filter between you and the environment. And that's exactly the same as what happens in every cell. And when you go from the theta brainwave level of the organs, and there are different qualities, like the gods of the Olympus, to the underlying level of the cells, you realize the cells are doing exactly the same as every organ does, but that within the cell, you don't have so much of a distinction between all of those different cells as you have already experienced and looked at the level of the organs, but suddenly you become more aware that all of the cells are doing exactly the same in being the inverse of the universe, and that at the cellular level you're actually connected to the universe as a whole, and that from the cell, you can actually connect up to different parts of the universe as a whole. So what you discovered at the level of the organs, them being different, at the level of the cell, you can suddenly discover that in your own unique being, you are nevertheless connected to every other organism that uses cells. So that means you're identical to other people, but you're just looking at things from a different perspective. You're part of humanity, but therein you are the same as every other life form. We're just living life from a different perspective. And that at the deepest level, you realize that in the cell, you're working with the principles of creation in the universe as a whole. Every living being does that, every other human does that, our species as a whole does that. So that's what you learn in the sleep cycle. The only difference between the sleep cycle and meditation cycle is that in the sleep cycle, you switch off and disconnect from your experience at those four different levels of functioning. And in meditation, you actually go into those different levels of function. You watch them, you observe them, you learn from them, and you learn to interact with them more wisely. That you become aware of what's happening at the body level, and how does the body do its own thing? And how can you work in such a way that the body can do its thing, but that you do not interfere with it? Likewise, at the level of the organs, that you discern that all these organs have their different qualities, and that these different qualities relate to the way that you feel with yourself, with respect to yourself. How when you're angry, you're sad, you're happy, you're aloof, and so on. And that you learn to appreciate that the body has its own happiness and health, and that by the thoughts that you have and that the beliefs that you maintain, you distort what the body can or will feel. And so if you identify too much with a specific kind of life outside, your body will need to live that kind of life too. And so in that sense, you limit what the body can do. In the old description, people used the comparison of the horse and a rider. And of course, the rider who's always in the battlefield will get a battlefield horse. The rider who's always running messages from one end of the country to the other will get a horse which is always at the edge of the capacity of being racing all the time. The farmer who uses the horse to pull a plow will, of course, end up with a horse which goes slow and, in a way, stop thinking. And the horse rider who takes out the horse and shows the horse the world, and together they discover things, while the horse is also free to do things by itself, will end up with a horse which is very alert, very lively, very aware of itself, and also very interested in the interaction with the rider. That model of the horse and the rider, that was also used as the centaur, half man, half horse, has been used in many places for people to be aware of how they connect to themselves and each other. And by better understanding that, it is better possible to have the body do its thing while with what you think and what you want to experience, you in a way keep that outside of the body. And then hypnosis is one of the many techniques by which people can actually talk with the body and talk with the different levels of consciousness in the body, so that they can learn more about what's going on inside of them, but also can have a better handle on correcting things where what they were thinking cannot be processed well by what the body can be doing. So then there's a whole separate story on hypnotic techniques, which was essentially all derived from meditation technique and communication techniques, that's a combination of the two. In the body, they interact with the meridian system, which is the information communication system between the cells, between the organs, within the body. So just to conclude, what I try to point out is that hypnosis is something which everybody does. Hypnosis being used and abused in very many manners in this culture and throughout all of the cultures. Hypnosis has very often been used to limit and cripple other people, by people telling other people what to do and what not to do. This is so invasive and pervasive in our society that people are not even aware of it, how much it happens. The only way to realize what's happening is by learning to use hypnosis yourself, and more specifically to refine that in the use of mutual hypnosis, and then ideally to hone that into the quality of self-hypnosis. And self-hypnosis then has a dual purpose. On the one hand, that you can actually program beliefs into your system, which will work better than the beliefs that you had. But also the other way around, that you can identify, dislodge, and dismantle beliefs which do not function. And the different hypnotic techniques serve that purpose. As I pointed out, hypnosis is actually the same principle of meditation. In meditation, you just watch what happens, and then what you learn in watching what happens at the level of the conscious, subconscious, unconscious, and out of conscious, you can then connect to what you feel at those different levels, which of course is best done when you see that meditation is actually a reiteration of the sleep cycle. So when you're able to connect meditation to the sleep cycle, you can also connect meditation through the sleep cycle into the hypnotic cycle. And then in hypnosis, you're actually applying consciously what you've studied by observation in meditation and in the sleep cycle. And the more you're able to work with self-hypnosis, the more you realize how by your choices you create your decision, you create your convictions, and you create your life. And so that's the whole purpose of hypnosis, that you can actually purposefully and intentionally go into a dialogue with yourself to look for the beliefs and the convictions that you have which don't work. And sometimes that's really difficult because it's so pervasive. It seems to be so true that you actually no longer question that you could question that. But once you start to use hypnosis for the simple things like falling asleep and waking up, or changing the way you eat or not eat, changing the way you think about people or don't, then likewise you can also apply that to the way you experience your life, or might choose to do that differently. So let me conclude the story of hypnosis by this, that hypnosis is a very powerful and relevant technique, and it's really worthwhile and important to learn it, to practice it, to really perform it. But it is just as necessary to realize that hypnosis is simply a technique which helps you become more aware of what your body is already doing in operating at these levels of consciousness. And that through meditation you can look at it, through hypnosis you can interact with it. But there is a much deeper level where you do not use the mind to work with these processes, but that through the meditation and through the hypnosis, you actually can connect up to the soul and see that there's a different part of you, which is much more fundamental, much more connected, and much more, let's say, wise, which can help you understand how all of this happens, and specifically how all of this matters.